Thank you. Thank you. My name's Fernando. I'm an alcoholic. Where's Fernando at? Arriba los manos. There he is. Okay, he told me to slow down. So if I get into my Joe Pesci mode, he's gonna put his hand like this. I drank for 16 years. I sobered up when I was 31 years old. That was enough for me. By the time I was 31 years old, I had drunk drivings, drunken publics, malicious mischief, false information, assault. You can add stupidity if that was a crime in itself. That's all the things that I had. So by the time I was 31, I was all shriveled up and sucked up. I look like Keith Richards. If you don't know what Keith Richards looks like now, this ain't good. I had grown an afro. My hair was long, and it was like, and I had a beard, a full thick beard, and it was black then. I had a beard, and it was like, it was almost like it was flat. Like if you pass out on the ground, and when you pass out on the floor, and you get all these rocks and Jolly Ranchers and Good and Plenty stuck up in your hair. And believe it or not, I was still functioning. I was going to college, and I was on my seventh year of a two-year college degree. I was a photo major in college, and I was working at a custom photo lab in Long Beach. So, you know, things on the outside looked pretty good because I didn't get around my family. I didn't hang around with anybody. But it's what I felt inside that was horrible. You think I looked like Keith Richards on the outside? I just felt worse on the inside. I was full of anger. I was going to listen to nobody. I was sick and I was tired, and I was sick and tired of being sick and tired because my plan did not work. See, it wasn't my fault that I was an alcoholic. See, when I grew up, my parents were divorced. I was 5'6" and I was shorter than all the other guys. I was Hispanic, and we're supposed to be drinking. The rest of my family all did. We're supposed to be drinking and fighting each other. These were my excuses. And when things got right, I was going to stop drinking. When I met the right girl, if I had the right car, if I had the right job, if I had a house with a white picket fence around it, I would stop drinking. Until then, I was just going to do whatever I wanted to do. But King Alcohol, cunning, baffling, and powerful, had other plans for me. And his plans for me were to be a big fat loser, it seemed like. So I was 31 years old, and I needed to go into recovery. So the photo lab I was working at said, Fernando, you got insurance. You can find any insurance program that you want, and we'll send you. This is in August of 1991. So if you're up late when you got those 13 channels and you're up late watching TV, watching Boris Karloff movies when you should be going to sleep and getting ready to go to work the next morning at 7, that's what I was doing. You get these commercials used to come on. There was one for Raleigh Hills, there was one for the Schick Center, and then there was one for a place called Charter Hospital. Now, I heard all these commercials and I heard about AA before. I'd been to a couple meetings and I didn't like it. I didn't need what they had to offer. I don't want none of that. But then the lady from Charter Hospital came out there and she had her traditions up like this. And she says, if you don't get help here, just get help somewhere. Charter Hospital, here I come. So I walk into Charter Hospital and I'm ready to find that girl, and this big ugly white guy named Jack comes up to me.
Hi, I'm Jack.
Jack shakes my hand, and Jack was my first Alcoholics Anonymous hero, as I call him. Because Jack wasn't going to put up with any of my nonsense. Jack told me straight up and he read me like a comic book. And Jack told me that I had to come as an outpatient, and that I couldn't be there for 28 days like my plan was. I had to come as an outpatient, I had to go to work, and I got to go to college, and I got to go to those ANA meetings, which I vowed I wouldn't go to. I said, okay, we'll see how it goes, Jack. So I went to work, and I remember I went to the weekend came around, and I went to the American Legion, and I got drunk. And Jack told me that we come back and we meet at our aftercare on Monday and Tuesday. So I come to the aftercare and they're saying, all these AA kiss asses, I call them. They're all sitting around this table and Jack was the head honcho sitting at the end, and everybody was talking and they'd pick on everybody to share. I got a sponsor, Jack. I went to stint. And they went right down the line and they go, what did you do, Fernando? Well, Jack, I went to the American Legion and I got drunk again. And you know, when you get to be like an AA old-timer with 30-some years of sobriety or first sergeant in the Marine Corps, they can get this vein popping out in their head when they get mad. I got one in my neck, and I think it's because of this one sponsee that I got. But Jack was very upset with me, I should say. And Jack told me that he knew where every AA meeting was in Long Beach, that's where I was at, and that he was going to check up on me. And if I lied, he was going to find out and kick me out of the program. So, you know, I was kind of afraid. I didn't know what was going on, but I didn't want any part of AA. I didn't want to hold anybody's hands, and I didn't want to read any of your silly papers, and I didn't want to do any of that stuff. Just, you know, maybe I could quit on my own, you know, even though I tried it didn't work, but I don't know. Let's just take it and see what happens, because I got no place else to go. I got no place else to go. I got no bank account. I barely got that job. I weigh 115 pounds. I look like chewed bubble gum. I don't have a driver's license. I ain't got nothing going on. If you ain't got nothing, you ain't got nothing to lose, I think the prophet Bob Dylan said. So what do I got to do? So I go to Charter Hospital, and I'll try it, and I'll go to those AA meetings. So I went to one AA meeting in Long Beach at a place called MWA. It was on this great big hill, and there was a whole bunch of people in there. And in those days, they used to smoke in the meetings. And I walked in there, and I remember it smelled like feet and cigarettes in that place. And I realized I'm in the wrong spot. Something's wrong here. So I stayed at that meeting, and I thought, what a waste of time. You know, what happened to me in my life? You know, I could have had class. I could have been a contender. I could have been somebody instead of a drunken bum, which all I was right at that time, and I knew it. And AA wasn't going to work either. So I drove home, and then the next day I had to be at work at 12 o'clock, and I had this little card. And this card gave me an idea where the meetings were. And in Long Beach, there was a meeting at a place called the Round Table. So it was at 10:30. I got to be at work at 12 o'clock. I go back to Jack with a couple of signatures, and I'm the man. So, okay, so I go to this meeting at 10:30. I walk in there, and it was the same old thing. There's those yellow walls and all these sayings up on the wall. And there's all these old-timers in there, though. There's all this smoke is up on floating up in the air. Non-smokers sit on this side. Smokers sit on this side. All the smoke just went right over to the other side. And all these old people, they're talking about their coughing and talking about their bad health, and they're in there smoking cigarettes. But this AA meeting was different from the ones I was at before, because at this AA meeting, there was a lot of sobriety in this place. And they all had names, and they all had certain places where they sit. There was Three Finger Bill, One Foot Joey, Wheelchair Ray, Daytime Mac, Nighttime Mac, Millie, and the list just goes on, Asphalt Bruce, and the list just goes on and on of all these characters. And I'm thinking, boy, you know, you know when you kind of know when your life is really screwed up? I just knew it right then. Look where I'm at now. I'm big time. So then this old man is running the meeting, and his name was Painter Tom. And Painter Tom had the face that only a mother could love or Picasso could paint. He was that ugly. It looked like with Tommy's face, it was last call for AA, and somebody slammed the door right in his face, twisted it and smashed it like this. He was already about 25 years sober, and Tommy had jet white hair and that crinkled up nose, and he always had a Camel non-filtered cigarette in his mouth. And it was all gummy and nasty hanging right there. And he always had a scowl on his face, and it had an ash that always stayed on there. Anywhere he'd turn like a turtle, his head would be like this, and the ash would say, he was like in a turret, like a gunner in a turret. And so Tom's running the meeting. He goes, if there's anybody that's got a court card, bring it up now, and I'll sign it for you. And so everybody from the recovery place brought your card up. You put it up. I'll sign it for you. You can leave if you want to, or you can stay. So I brought my card up to Tommy, and I put it on, here you go, sir. I'll sign your card, and you get the F out of here and go get drunk if you want to, or you can stay. And I'm thinking to myself, you can't talk to me like that. Aren't you supposed to love me till I can love myself? Bunch of donut eaters. Aren't you supposed to give me a cup of coffee and give me one of them silly books and tell me it's going to be okay to keep coming back? And the old man said, kid, if you're going to stay, you're going to keep your big mouth shut and you're going to keep your ears open. He said, grab a seat and take the heat off. So against my better judgment, I stayed that day. And when I stayed that day, I started to listen what these people in AA had to say. And what they had to say was, they came up to this podium one at a time, and there was a guy came up there, and he had come up in a Harley Davidson motorcycle. He had tattoos all over him. He had a little tear in his eye, the tattoo, and he was up at the podium crying. It was his turn to share. And he's crying because the best thing that ever happened to him was he got to spend the weekend with his grandchild. And this guy's telling the truth. The next guy comes up there, his name was Larry C. And Larry C. said when he drank, he was nothing but a loudmouth, obnoxious, bumbling, stumbling, falling down drunk. And nobody ever explained me who I was better than Larry C. there. That cat never saw me a day in his life, and he told me who I was and what I was. But they also gave me this thing called a solution. And they were saying, if you don't pick up a drink today and you lay your head on the pillow tonight, you're a winner. And that's what I got to do. And I hadn't been called a winner in a long time because I always was called a loser, and I thought I was a loser. I wasn't a loser, I was a quitter. Because anytime anything got complicated in my life, whether it was a relationship, a job, school, I quit. Which means I got drunk. That's what that means. So what I realized too is I can't get sober for anybody. I can't get sober for my mom, for a girlfriend, for a job, because you threaten me, or because a judge is going to put me in jail. I can't get sober for anybody but for my raggedy ass, and that's it. I got to get sober for Fernando, and that's all. And I started listening to what they had to say, and the Spirit came into me, and I'm cured. I don't have to come back now. So I honestly believe that. So I'm walking out of there, and Tommy's there with a meeting, and he says, "Keep coming back, kid." And I said, "Wow, first he tells me to get out, now he tells me to come back in, this poor guy. One shot too many, I guess." So I go to Charter Hospital, I got a couple signatures, and now I'm an old-timer with 2 days, and I know everything now. So I'm there, and Jack says, "Okay, Fernando, now get a sponsor." But for me, I got to get the right sponsor. I got to get the guy that likes jazz. I got to get the guy that the girls love. Well, there's no such thing for Fernando. There ain't no such thing for me or a sponsor or anything else, because Painter Tommy became my first sponsor. And Painter Tom was the guy. I talk about him when I describe him, but I did it to his face before when he was alive. And Tommy was the father I never had. He was the grandfather I never had, and he was the best friend I never had. And I could tell Tommy anything about me, I could tell that man. And I think he even listened sometimes, because Tommy was getting up there now. He'd be reading the paper and he'd be dozing off. Yeah, okay, Orlando. I mean, Raul. I mean, Fernando. Okay, yeah, that's right. Go give me a cup of coffee. And then I'd come to Tommy with all these horrible things that are happening in my life. And when I was about a month sober, Miles Davis died. The great Miles Davis is dead, September 1991. And I go to Tommy. "Tommy, Miles Davis is dead." "Who?" I said, "Miles Davis. Does he come here?" I said, "No, he don't come here." He's a trumpet player. He's jazz. "Oh, what the hell are you worried about? Don't drink. Keep coming back. Sit down." And then Tommy, you know, I was feeling better. I gained some weight. I was going back to college, and I had a crush on the lady that worked at the bank. And I was going to ask her out on a date. And Tommy said, "Well, go ahead. But be prepared for what happens." So I went, and I asked her out on a date, and it took me every bit of courage that I had. And I asked her out on a date, and she said no, she was seeing somebody. And I went to Tommy for some support, and Tommy says, "Well, she's probably got class. That's why she didn't go with you." I'm thinking, oh, for crying out loud. He goes, when the time is right, you'll know it, and other people will know it too. So he just told me to keep coming back. See, nothing was going to fix me, so I thought. So I was going to AA all the time. I was going to a bunch of meetings, and all of a sudden, I want to drink. Out of nowhere, I want to drink. I'm going to 2 or 3 meetings a day. I don't need this higher power or whatever it is they call it, and I don't need to work them silly steps, because they said, if I don't drink, I won't get drunk. They said, don't drink even if your ass falls off. Well, what if it does fall off? Well, you take it, you put it in a bag, and you take it to a meeting with you, and you put it in a chair next to you, and you be quiet. I can do that. But see, I didn't have that higher power working in my life. I didn't have it going on. So King Alcohol just got me out of nowhere. You know, they said that you can make a higher power a fan or a doorknob if you want to, and try that. But then I told that to Tommy. He said, "Won't you feel kind of stupid praying to a doorknob?" "Give it time." He said, "Give it time." So, okay, so I go and I buy this quart of Coors, and I'm going to drink it before anybody knows it. But then I got all this AA gibberish in my head. And I'm driving to my mom's condo, and I got that quart of Coors sitting next to me in my car like it's my date. And it really is, because that drink was everything to me. That drink was my wife, it was my future, it was my job, it was everything to me, was that one drink. And if it just take that one drink, and I could lose it all. So when I was going home, I remember all these AA cliches that I make fun of and laugh at. They were all in my head, man. And all these ugly AA old-timers, it was like a 1940 Universal horror movie. When you got the faces coming in and out, "Don't drink, keep coming back." It's like, oh, I'm messed up. I couldn't drink. So I went into my mom's condo, I opened up that quart, and I dumped it out, and it went down the drain, and I said, "God, please, can you help me?" And this is when I believe I did our AA second step, and I was restored to sanity, because I had to get a power greater than myself to keep me away from that first drink. And I believe that I found it then. And to describe my higher power, I don't know what it is, but I know it's there. The United States Supreme Court, they say, we don't know what pornography is, but we know it when we see it. I don't know what my higher power is, but I know it because I could feel it. So I was raised Catholic, and I was used to go to the Gurdwara for the Sikhs, because my grandfather was from India, and I'm Mexican. So you mix them up, and here's what you get, Indian and Mexican. So I was, when it came to religion, I just knew, you better believe something, or you're going to get it. You better believe something. So I believed, so it wasn't that hard. So I was believing that, and then I did my third step on the highway, the 101 freeway, because I didn't know how to turn things over to God, and then I turned the traffic over to God when on a rainy day, and that's when I did my third step. Now, Painter Tom smoked too many cigarettes, and he passed away after about 2.5 years, 3 years. So I sponsored myself for the next 7 years. Yeah, somebody laughed. Yeah, you're right. It's not a good thing. But when you sponsor yourself, you got a lot of good ideas. You know, you got... But they're not good. So pretty soon, here's what I'm stuck with. I got about 9 years sober, and I'm stuck with the first half of the first step, and that's all I got. So, you know, I got to work some steps, and I got to do some work. So what I did was I got a job promotion, and I moved instead. Now, you can do a geographical too, sober. So I moved up to Concord, California from Long Beach. Started going to meetings out here because they wouldn't know who I was. But they're crazy out here. They're talking about recovery. They're talking about helping other people. And I could tell you a funny drunkalog story, but I can't tell you how I did my steps. So I thought I got to get in the gear. So I went to one of those New Year's Eve dances that I vowed I was too cool to go to. So I went to this dance, and there was a guy named Gary there. And we're back on the back wall at the dance, like we're back in the eighth grade. You can ask a girl to dance? Oh, I don't know, maybe. How about you? So some crazy thought in my head, I think it was from God. He said, you know, I asked Gary, hey, Gary, would you hear my fifth step? He goes, you never did a fifth step? I go, no. He goes, sure, I'll hear it. And then later on, I asked him to be my sponsor. And when I did my fourth step, my fifth step, I like joined the gang, it felt like. Because I got to join AA rather than just go to it and sit on the outside. Because once I started working my steps, I realized, you know, I ain't such a bad guy after all. Once I let go of all those things that I had to hold inside, all those deep, dark secrets that I thought no one else ever would ever do anything like that, I had to let that go to God. So I started to share at meetings then. And I got to share at a meeting at a place called, on a Monday night, it was called St. Bonaventure's. And I'm already on my ninth step. And I don't know why this guy asked me to share, but I was a speaker. And I was, you know, I know how to do the AA talk. I know how to BS people. Nah, nah, nah. I've been to enough meetings. So I was there and I was giving the talk. You know, oh, I can't wait till I can help people when I'm done with my steps. I want to help all of you. I love everybody and all this. It just ain't me, but it's all coming out. And then all of a sudden, this big, ugly white guy with a bald head, about 250 pounds, Big John, raises his hand in the middle of the meeting. Will you be my sponsor? Well, certainly, John, I would love to be your sponsor. Let's get together after the meeting. So this guy's not going to talk to me. He ain't going to call me. I'm going to give him my number. He ain't going to say nothing. Because I've been there, and people always do that stuff. So I give John my number, and when I get home, he leaves a message on my answering machine. And John says, this is
John. Did you get my message?
And then he calls back to make sure that I got the message. And then he calls back again to find out what we're going to do tomorrow. Well, tomorrow I was going to watch the game, but since it's John calling, maybe we better go to a meeting together. We went to step studies together. We went to two or three meetings a day if we could on the weekends. Big John, this character saved my life because he was on fire, man. This guy was on fire, and I had to run with him. I had to pretend I'm on fire, too. So this is how I got in the groove of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I'm still his sponsor. On the 21st of January, he celebrated 18 years of sobriety. So Johnny's still doing the deal. Now John called me for his first 12-step call. That's when we got to go help another alcoholic. So he calls me and he says, he told me he went on a 12-step call. I said, well, what happened? Tell me what you did. He said, well, they called me and then they said, come over because he's in the garage and he's in there smoking crack and he's in there drinking. So John went, so I said, what'd you do, John? So he went in there with duct tape and pepper spray. And John said, you're either going to get in the trunk, you're going to Kaiser, either in the trunk or in the front seat. What's it going to be? My first thought was, John, don't tell anybody I'm your sponsor, first of all. And this program we have is of attraction, not abduction. So keep that in mind, too. So I lived the good life in Alcoholics Anonymous. I got to travel. I'm a traveler. I've been all over the world. I've been to India to try to find my higher power. It just made me more confused. I've got a new job. I work at the Oakland airport, and I had to go through some tough times. You know, sober. At 25 years sober was probably the hardest years of my life. I'm 27 and a half now, but at 25 years sober, I was down and almost out. It wasn't about drinking, because I'm an alcoholic, but alcohol's not my problem. It's what I got up in my head that's my problem. I was suffering from hepatitis C at the time, and it really started to show its ugly face. And I was really tired all the time, and I didn't want to go to work. But then I got the medicine that they have, and I got the cure for it. But in the meantime, I was staying at home a lot, and I was up in my head thinking. I didn't want to go to AA, and people were dying on me. My sponsor, Gary, passed away. Robin Williams had passed away a few years before. My father passed away. How do you deal with all this stuff? And I didn't know how to deal with emotions, and I didn't know how to deal with all that. I thought I knew, but at 25 years sober, I most certainly didn't. So I'm on the couch in the fetal position watching Perry Mason, and I'm like, what the heck happened? And I don't want to go to AA meetings. And the one thing that I always did was go to AA meetings. And so I found a meeting on Friday night at 7 o'clock in Walnut Creek, and there was maybe about five guys used to go to it. And I was one of them, because I don't want to go to a meeting, and I don't want anybody asking me to share. I just want to be, just leave me alone, because I got kind of that AA thing in me that I hated AA for a while. You know, I was getting, everything would irritate me in AA. Don't let her share again, because she shared last time, and I'm sick of hearing her. I'd get up there, and I'd get a cup of coffee, and there they are talking. Yeah, I haven't seen you forever. Twirling the cup. Move your ass so I can get my cup of coffee. You know what I mean? Just all these little things started to irritate me, and it wasn't them, because they're always going to be that way. There's always going to be somebody that irritates you somewhere. And what it was me. And so I had to, you know, do the work on me. And so what I had to do was I went and got a therapist from work. They gave me a therapist. Maybe that'll help. So I go see this therapist like six times the biggest waste of time. So what she finally did at the end, after I think she finally listened to what I had to say at the end, she said for me to go to my AA meetings and ask a young lady out and ask her if she wants to go have coffee with you. So I'm thinking to myself, oh, that's great. I'm all screwed up, so let me screw you, somebody else up too. That's a good idea. I think I'll pass on that one. So, you know, I was still in the dilemma. So finally I did what I did when I was a newcomer. I got that AA book, and there was a meeting at Saturday morning at 10:30 in Walnut Creek at a place behind the Mystic Dream. And if nobody knows me at that meeting, I'll go there and I'll do the deal there. So I go in there, and it was a really small room. It still is a small room. And there's not a whole lot of people in there, but I felt comfortable in there. And I went in there and I sat down and I listened to what they had to say, and it was good. And I went back the next week, and I went back the next week. Finally, I asked this guy that was there named Mario if he would be my sponsor. So I got a new sponsor. And being what new sponsors do, he gave me a commitment to be a secretary there. So I was a secretary, and I got to know people, and I had to reach out to the other people that I knew and ask them to come share my meeting. So it's a never-ending battle in AA, I mean, for me. It's like you can't stop. I can't stop and get out of the light of my higher power, because if I get out of the light, I'm going to get picked off. And I have to stay in the light. I got to keep doing the deal. And it's not just going to meetings. It's the connection that I have with other people. Because I'm a loner, and I've always been a loner. I could stay by myself, and I was doing that for a while, for five, 6 days at a time. And I just got to let other people know that, and I got to just keep coming back. And I want to, again, I'm almost done, because where I'm at right now is a place I never thought I'd be, because tough times still going with me. I work at the airport, and I didn't get paid for 35 days, and I didn't know how I was struggling through that. I had to struggle through death. I had to struggle through illness. And if you don't drink and you keep coming back and you rely on beautiful people, it will all work out. And it did. And where I'm at right now, there's a musician named John McLaughlin. And he has a song called, "What Need Have I of This? What Need Have I of That? For I'm dancing at the feet of my Lord. All is bliss. All is bliss." And that's where I am right now. And again, I want to thank you all for asking me to share. Because through the Friends of Alcoholics Anonymous, you know, I can get by with a little help from my friends. I can try with a little help from my friends, and I won't get high with a little help from my friends. So thank you all. Thank you.